Well, this is our day to shine. And one of the ways the world most needs that, especially from the church and especially now, right now, is through the process of reconciliation, the rebuilding of community, the amazing power of forgiveness. And in order to do that, it begins with a step. Actually, our anger begins with a step. If you're watching this, you'll see right now a picture of a door. It's a real door. It's a wooden door with a hole in it, and it's found in St. Patrick's Cathedral. Laura and I were there, my daughter and I, not too long ago, and that's the door we're invited to walk through. That's the door that Jesus has opened to us with God, the door of reconciliation. To start with a few words that Paul writes to the church at Philippi. Sometimes we romanticize the church in its early days, but it was made up of real people who struggled with each other, didn't like each other, had to wrestle with difficult people, just like you and I do. And then we'll look at where this journey through the door of reconciliation begins. And I'll invite you to think right now, is there somebody in your life where there's a barrier, there's an impediment, there's something in your heart, there's a step that needs to be taken? Ask God, would you bring that name to me and help me to know a next step to take? So here we go. This is Paul after he's told the Philippians to stand firm together in the fourth and final chapter. He writes these words: I plead with Yodia and I plead with Syntyche to be of the same mind in the Lord. Yes, and I ask you, my true companion, help these women, since they have contended at my side in the cause of the gospel, along with Clement and the rest of my co-workers, whose names are in the book of life. Now, it'd be fascinating to know, but we don't. More details about who these women were. We don't know what the conflict was going on with them. We don't know who Clement was or the rest of the co-workers whose names are in the book of life. But we do know some stuff. We know what happens when there is conflict between people. I want to read you a little bit and then just invite you to think about this. This is from a book called Forgive for Good by Fred Luskin, who heads up the Stanford Forgiving Process Project. Anytime there's a conflict, anytime anger starts to get a hold of me, I always know what's happened. Something has taken place that I don't like. My will has been frustrated. But then what happens next is I tell myself a story. And the story that I tell myself is quite biased, although it doesn't look biased to me. It makes me look more innocent than I actually am. It makes that other person look more guilty than they actually are. It justifies my feelings of hurt and self-righteousness and judgmentalism. So, I was having breakfast yesterday, and Nancy said something and it made me think, oh, you know, based on that, I need to contact somebody, text them. I better do it right now before I forget. And then she said to me, would you not text on your phone? We don't have a whole lot of time together at breakfast. I would like to be with you. Now, I could have said to myself, what a cool thing. This remarkable woman really wants to be with me, even after all these years. She would like my attention. She would like me to be with her face to face, for us to be together in one heart and one spirit. Did I say that to myself? No. I told myself immediately, without even thinking about it, things like, I think she's on her phone a lot more than I'm on my phone. I'm only doing this because she said something that prompted me to think this, and if I forget it now, it might not happen. And then I became defensive, and I justified myself, and it created this little breach. But in between the event itself and then my defensive response was this story. And folks who do research in this field will say it's a grievance story. And we all tell ourselves grievance story. And usually that's where sin kind of sneaks into the anger game. This is from William James. This is a wonderful quote. The attitude of unhappiness is not only painful, it's also mean and ugly. What can be more base and unworthy than the pining, puling, mumping mood? Wonderful language. No matter by what outward ills it may have been engendered, what is more injurious to others? That's my grievance story. What less helpful to others as a way out of difficulty? It but fastens and perpetuates the trouble which occasioned it and increases the total evil of the situation. When I tell myself a grievance story, it always tends to be quite binary. There is a good person who's wholly good, and that's me, and there's a bad person who's wholly bad, and that's, in this case, Nancy. She will be the object of that more than anybody else in my life because I see her more than anybody else in my life. And part of what Paul shows us in this passage is with these two women, Yodia and Syntyche, they're trapped right now in conflict. There's a need for them to walk through the door of reconciliation. But that doesn't mean that they should be thought of as bad people or inferior people. In fact, he says to the church at Philippi that they are champions together with him in the cause of the gospel. But they get stuck, as we all do, in a grievance story. Luskin goes on to do a little test to help determine, is the story I've been telling myself and other people, because I'll generally do that, is it a grievance story? So think about a conflict in your own life or a difficult person in your own life and just reflect on these questions while I ask them. Have you told your story more than twice to the same person? Do you replay the events that happen more than two times a day in your mind? Do you find yourself speaking to the person who hurt you even when that person is not there? Oh, those are some of my best conversations. Have you made a commitment to yourself to tell the story without upset and then found yourself unexpectedly agitated? Is the person who hurt you the central character of your story? See, in my grievance story, it becomes quite disempowering because it's really about that other person. There's nothing I can do about that. Does your story focus primarily on your pain and what you have lost? In your story, is there a villain? Have you made a commitment to yourself not to tell your story again and then broken your vow? Do you look for other people with similar problems to tell your story to? Has your story stayed the same over time? You know, because when Jesus' story, when the story of the cross and reconciliation, when my stories get caught up in that story, they kind of change. And then finally, have you checked the details of your story for accuracy? Luskin says if you answer yes to five or more of the first 11 questions and or no to question 12, no, I haven't checked for accuracy. I would prefer not to. I don't want to have to change it in case it's not accurate. You're telling yourself a grievance story. If so, do not lose hope. You can as easily change a grievance story as create one. And that's what Paul is calling for here in just these few remarkable words to the church at Philippi, is for the church to be able to move beyond the grievance story and walk through the door of reconciliation. A couple more words about this. This is from Jerry Hawthorne, his commentary in Philippians. One of the striking sentences, there's so much we don't know about in these few words, is that he asks his loyal yoke fellow to help these women. In other words, if you see somebody stuck in your small group, in your family, in a church, instead of thinking, oh, those poor losers, why can't they get it together? Recognize humbly, we're all that way. We all wrestle with it. Instead of gossiping about it or ignoring it or withdrawing it, can I be of help? Maybe it's simply to pray for them and to remember my own neediness. Who is this loyal yoke fellow? Here's what Jerry writes. The simplest and perhaps best answer is to say Paul sees the entire Philippian church as a unit, as a single individual who shares with him the burden of his apostolic work, so he addresses them. He sees the Philippian church yoked together with him as two oxen teamed up to accomplish an important task. He asks them to cooperate with him by resisting division. Don't take sides. Don't say, yeah, I'm with Yodia, or I think Syntyche is right. Work together to restore harmony. Help them, he says. You must. It's an order, even though I ask you to do it. It's striking. These are women now. And he has high praise for their work in the gospel, so high that some people in the ancient world tried to change the names. They have feminine endings to make them understood as men. They were not men. They were women. And Paul, while he could pull rank as an apostle and order them around, he uses a very vulnerable verb. I plead with you. I plead with you. I ask you. I request of you. He is honoring the fact that each of us has the key to the door of our own heart, and no one can force us to unlock it. And he says, you ought to do that for these women because they contended together with me. He uses a word soon, Elflane, that the word athletic comes from. It's a word from the games, or a word that gladiators would be involved with. So these are champions, but they're stuck right now. And he's saying to the whole church, let's work together to help them walk through. And I'll just say a word about the door of reconciliation and then invite you to think about where you can walk through it. When we were at St. Patrick's in Ireland, they have this odd-looking door. It's many hundreds of years old. Back in the 1400s, there were two families, the Fergusons and the Butlers, and they were feuding over who might be named Lord Deputy Mayor of Ireland, representative of the British monarch. And so they would have a series of battles with each other that got quite dangerous, quite injurious. And eventually the Butlers fled to this great cathedral to get sanctuary inside. And the Fergusons came and they said, no, we want reconciliation. We want to end this feud. We want to be reconciled to each other. But the Butlers didn't trust. They thought it's a trick. So the head of the Fergusons actually had a hole cut through the door and said, I'm going to stick my arm through this door and offer it as a gesture of reconciliation and friendship, knowing that if you want to, you could cut my arm off, but I will make myself vulnerable so that we can be reconciled. And in Ireland, there actually is an expression. I've not heard it in the States. You might have. But to take a risk, to do something bold when the outcome is uncertain, is to be said to chance your arm. And that comes, or apparently comes from, when Mr. Ferguson put his arm in a moment of vulnerability through the hole in that door, and I'll chance my arm. I'll risk it to let you know I want to be reconciled together with you. Reconciliation is always a risk. Sometimes we don't have the opportunity. There's cases where I know for some of us, we'd give about anything in the world to be able to do that, but not today. It's not available to us today. But in many cases, it is. Just in small little ways, with the people that I live with, the people that I work with, the people that I go to church with, chance your arm. At least I can begin by ceasing to tell myself the grievance story that gets me stuck. And remember, whoever that other person is, maybe it's kind of a small thing like a cell phone conversation. Maybe it's a real big thing. They're not a monster. They're a human being too. And I'm likely to see them through the lens of my grievance story as something less than human, something less than what God sees. So I can ask him to help me start telling myself a truer story, a better story, and to pray, and maybe one day, the door of reconciliation might open. Meanwhile, here's the data showing.
Hey, thanks for tuning in. I'm Tim, part of the team at Become New. We distribute 10-minute teachings just like this one every weekday to help you grow spiritually one day at a time, to help you grow, to help me grow, hopefully to help us all grow. And growth comes not just from learning things with our minds, but putting things into practice. And so we hope that you take these teachings and apply them to your life a little bit each day. And in so doing, start to see God work in your actual real life, in the person that you're becoming. And today's teaching was on reconciliation. Did anyone else find that one to be convicting? When I start to think about a list of possible people that I might need to reconcile with, I don't know about you, but I feel like there's a hardness of heart that sets in, or an inflexibility in my mindset or way of thinking. And I was just challenged today to bring that to God and to bring that to one other person. In my case, it's going to be my wife, to just talk about it with her and reflect on it and think, okay, have I done everything I need to do to reconcile in these different situations? And that always takes wisdom, because for some folks, it may not be safe or good to try and reconcile with them, but we need to do everything that we can. And I just thought it was a great teaching today. So we'd love to hear from you and what God is tugging on your heart, what maybe he's inviting you to do today and to put into action. Because again, we grow not just through learning, but through practice. We're glad that you're here. You can find all the other resources from Become New at becomenew.com. We'll catch you next time.